Welcome to Local Talk on KHOI Community Radio, where we explore the people, stories, and events in Central Iowa. This week, we'll be focusing on South Storey County, the towns of the Ballard School District. Paul Wearson and I are your county reporters for today. Hi, Paul.
Hi, Susan. And we've made many road trips to South Storey County since 2012, so I guess, well, this is a mega trip. Would you call it that?
I guess I'd call it selections from my favorite interviews concerning the ways Kelly, Slater, Huxley, and Cambridge have met the challenge of developing their own identities while forging a unifying one in We Are Ballard. We'll find out where they got that name later in the program.
Well, it all started when we interviewed the mayors of Kelly, Slater, and Huxley in the summer of 2012. And I remember you were so astonished with their differences. You even said you'd fallen in love with these towns.
Since then, we've visited several other towns in Storey, Greene, Boone, and Webster counties. And the list of towns I've fallen in love with has grown. But the Ballard towns will always be special because of something called the Ballard Way. I asked several people about it after Michael Mackey first used the phrase. Then John Ronka, principal of Ballard High School, told me that the person who originated the phrase was Mr. Oberding, now principal of Ballard Middle School in Huxley. I found him coming out of his office last Friday on his way to a track meet. He didn't have time for an interview then, as he said he had to be on hand to welcome the volunteers who were helping put on the track meet.
I understand that. It takes a lot of people to time and measure and all these things, so I know it was imperative he gets out there. But I understand he was gracious enough to agree to speak with us by phone this morning to kick off our program. Hello, Merle.
Good morning.
I'm sure you have a very busy day ahead of you, so we really appreciate your taking the time to tell us how the idea of the Ballard Way got started.
Well, I appreciate you taking the time to take an interest in our communities and our school. I think it's awesome.
Well, can you answer my curious question? How did the idea of the Ballard Way get started?
Well, I think the Ballard Way, in my estimation, has always just been a culture that's been in the four communities. You refer to the four communities of Kelly, Cambridge, Slater, Huxley, and I totally agree with you. The identities of those communities are definitely different, and it's neat to see those communities still have their own individual take. I personally work with the school district, and it's neat to see the people from those four communities come together, even though they have their differences of how they do things for a common goal of our school. I truly believe when you say Ballard Community Schools, it's just truly a community school. And in that, over time, and long before I got here, that culture had been established. It's just a neat place to live and be part of through the process. I came here about middle 80s, and I was just going to be here for a short stint, but we're still here.
You know, that's a common story in the interviews that I did. People who thought they'd be here for a year or two or went away and wanted to come back. And so I guess the Ballard Way is kind of like a highway.
Well, yeah, and it's just really neat. I think it really starts, like you said, it was when we first moved here, you just sensed something different. Just some observations, you know, I have each community that we talked about all have their own celebrations. They put on their own things, whether it starts with a pancake breakfast at the Kelly Fire Station or Cambridge. They celebrate, some days in June to recognize their town. And Slater's got the 4th of July, and Huxley, they do Prairie Fest. It's just amazing the number of people that volunteer for these events and step forward, and it's just it's kind of a neat atmosphere, and I think that kind of entails you go to these communities. Since I've been here, we're probably fourth and fifth generation kids coming through school. You know, people that grew up here many, many years ago, their kids went away to college, and then they come back to live. and then they have kids, and they go away to college, and they come back. It's just amazing that, you know, some of the traditions of some of the names in the communities, they just go on and on and on back to, you know, the probably the 40s and 50s.
Yeah, but
people leave and they come back.
That's pretty neat. But the other thing that is that people who come here new are greeted. And, you know, in a lot of towns where you have people going back several generations, if you don't happen to be part of that group, you have a little hard time getting fitting in. But it's not true at Ballard.
No, and that is, you know, just to give you a couple examples, I do a lot of the work with the activities department. Two of my main workers, or I shouldn't say two of my main workers, but people that volunteer for a lot of things. We have a lady that runs our concession stand for all our events, and she's moved into the community. I have another guy that helps out with football games and track meets and cross-country meets. He's all of a sudden, his name appeared on our list about 3 or 4 years ago, and you know, the name was unfamiliar, and he's a gentleman who moved into town, and he's willing to help at all types of events. And that's the thing that's kind of neat, whether it be, you know, a teenage kid or a middle-aged kid or to a retired citizen. From a school standpoint, we like to and we want to get them involved. We have a lot of retired people that work our events or come and support our events. We had a middle school track meet last night, and, you know, 5 or 6 middle school boys showed up, didn't have to be there, and all of a sudden they're moving the hurdles and they're raking the sand pits, and they're just they step in, and we want to make those people feel welcome. It's just it's kind of the way we do things. Volunteerism is and service is very huge in this community.
Thank you so much, Merle. That's a wonderful introduction to the Ballard Way, and have a good day. As we move forward with our exploration, I'd like to play a clip from a recording of the Ballard Concert Band under the direction of Scott Keyes, as played for the 3A State Large Group on May 4th, 2012. This piece is Prelude Siciliano by Malcolm Arland.
A band number like that, and that was a rousing prelude to today's show. Now, what's coming next, Susan?
Well, as you regular listeners may know, this is the fourth program in a series of regional history. The first week was a roundtable with representatives of historical societies in Boone, Story City, Slater, and Huxley about how their towns got started.
And all their stories were full of surprises.
That's right. How many people know that Boone was once called Montana? Story City was once Fairview. And some of the original buildings from Slater were moved from Sheldahl.
And what about Huxley being named for Thomas Henry Huxley? He was otherwise known as Darwin's Bulldog for debating people in the 19th century who didn't believe in Darwin's theory of evolution. What a guy.
I'll bet his nephew, Mr. Merrill, who picked the name, didn't dream that evolution would still be controversial to some in the area 100 years later.
Well, then we went from historical societies to the origin of the road trip in program number 2 of the series. And I was surprised by that because I thought our first interviews were road trips.
They were, but we didn't think of making them into signature programs to play on local talk. And that gave us a chance to talk about some of our favorite road trips to Boone, Jefferson, and Nylund's Corner. But when we thought about returning to South Story County, I felt we needed to go back and learn about the early days. So program number 3 consisted of interviews with people who reminisced about life before school consolidation in 1958, when the Ballard School District first brought students from all 4 towns together in the high school in Huxley.
Now, where are we going to pick up the story today?
I'd like to play a clip from an interview with Ron and Jean Finch from Kelly about their experience during the first year of consolidation. They found surprising advantages, as they will tell you.
Well, I was in basketball, and I competed against Slater girls and Cambridge girls and so forth, so now all of a sudden we're going to be one team. And they chose the Slater coach, which we kind of thought, ooh, you know, that might make a difference in playing time and everything, but it didn't. We all got together, and we got to the state tournament that year, which was very exciting, and I think we all got along great. So that was a fun time. And then band, I was a major at the drum major, and we got awards for that, and it just seemed like we all came together very good.
So. Now, I have to add something. We didn't get the state tournament in baseball, but we got to the sub-state. So those same guys that we used to play against in Slater and Cambridge when we all joined together just made us a better team. So we actually come within one game of going to the state. So
I was surprised that no one we talked to in those interviews around the consolidation in 1959 seemed upset by having to become one. For one thing, when they all got together, they were able to field a football team, which they never had been able to do at their separate high schools. But the thing that impressed me when I first heard about this was the way they chose their name. Every other consolidated school combines the names of the towns in some way, but they picked a creek that ran through all four towns. And how did you experience consolidation in Roland's story?
Well, so many families are interconnected. It's a Norwegian, Scandinavian community, and everyone had relatives in Roland who lived in Story City. And I think that the key thing to avoid conflict there was the fact that both towns retained an attendance center. High school was in Story City and the middle school in Roland. And I think attendance centers are such an important component about consolidation and getting along and making the transition, because an attendance center is like a post office. You know, it's part of your community identity. If you lose that, you're somehow diminished. And that's true in other ways, too. You know, my family moved out to our farm, where I live now as a retired guy, in 1930. And over that time, many, many young people have grown up there. One of them was killed in Korea. And now, across the road from me is a dairy farm, a former dairy farm, and two boys have been growing up there in recent years, you know. And it's so nice for me personally that the school bus still stops in our little neighborhood out there on E18. And now the younger boy, the first boy, is in Iowa State, and the second boy now is in seventh grade. So in 3 years now, when he begins to drive, the bus won't be coming anymore. And somehow, in my mind, that diminishes our neighborhood. So in the same way, if you lose your attendance center, you're diminished. You know?
Well, and that's what happened in Ballard, too, because originally the towns had their own attendance centers. They all had schools in them. And Mr. Ronka came when they still all had schools. He's the high school principal, and our next interview is with him. And just a little introduction, there'll be some little clips of music from Taylor Stichka, who we'll hear from later, because it's all about who's going to be king of the sandbox.
Teaching position, actually, right out of college, got the position here. Was introduced to the elementary centers at Kelly and Slater in Cambridge. Actually did some teaching in those buildings with the elementary physical education kids. And I'm thinking to myself as I'm wandering the hallways at those schools, coming from these rich, rich schools and these big, big districts, thinking, wow, there's a real, real difference in these rural communities as far as their facilities go. And it was evident to me right off the bat, wonderful little communities, aging schools, and that was going to be an issue. I could tell that from the start. And lo and behold, 6-7 years later, they're building new elementary schools and tearing down the old. They had run their course. But that was a contentious time because the community schools disappeared. you know, they don't have a school in Kelly anymore. It's a community center. And the people love that little school and their little town. And so the administrative team and the school board had to roll out to the people that one of these facilities has to go. And that was difficult. And the people from Kelly were not real pleased about that. We got through it. People voted, and the schools were built in Slater and Cambridge, and they're beautiful elementary facilities, and they've been added on to ever since that 1993. So the growth has required us to move forward. And then shortly after that, we went ahead and grade consolidated. So we went to grade-alike buildings. We used to have kindergartners through sixth graders at each center. And that was problematic because the teachers in those buildings and the curriculums in the buildings were quite different from one another. And we felt that the kids coming from Slater would realistically not get to know the kids from Cambridge until they were in junior high. So that's, and I was the junior high school principal, the assistant principal actually, during that time of transition. Superintendent Mike Crum would have been the one in his last year in 05-06 to make that happen, that transition happen, if you follow me. And we went to the public and had public meetings and public forums, and I realized quite quickly how passionate people were about keeping their children in their school that they were currently in. Through many, many meetings and through many, many passionate conversations with people, the board decided to go ahead and make it a grade-alike system. So at that time, the kindergarten through third grade building became the West Center, and then the students in fourth, fifth, and sixth grade went to Cambridge. One of the biggest issues at that time was my kindergarten daughter is not going to be in the same building as my fourth grade son anymore. And that was a real, real stumbling block in people's minds, and I can understand that. We all could comprehend that. I had two children at the time. One was at East and one was at West. And they were separated during the day. We survived that. Families survived that because it was truly better for kids educationally to have all third graders in one building, all fourth graders, all fifth graders, all sixth graders in a different building compared to their kindergarten through third grade students and staff. So that was a very interesting time. At this point in our existence as a district, that was the best move we could ever made.
Do you think now most of the parents feel that way?
Oh yeah, I really do. The vast majority of parents feel that way.
I used to be the king of the sandbox until Taylor chose paper and I chose rock. And now he's playing with the dump truck you won fair and square. But that doesn't make it easy and I still don't care. I want to have that feeling again.
The process began about 07-08 school year. And then, you know, we completed and finished, and now we've been in, this is our second year in this building. And this has been the focal point of the community. When we built this high school, there were many, many people that were on the building committees thinking that we should build a pool, an indoor pool, in this facility. And we all said, Slater has a pool that would be really quite contentious. And we backed off. Some of the people who wanted to see that happen were actually Slater people. They thought we could survive with both an indoor pool in Huxley and an outdoor pool in Slater. And at the time we thought, let's not go to that well right now. That's down the road. Let's let the city deal with the pool, not the school. So we backed off that. And yeah, there's people that move into Huxley thinking, why isn't there an elementary center here? Why do we have to bus our kids to, you know, Slater and Cambridge to go to school, an elementary school? That's come up many times.
So what you're talking about is a kind of constant negotiation process between the needs and desires of each town and the kind of needs and desires of the broader community.
Right. Absolutely. And I've lived here for, 25 years and lived in three different homes and do everything I can to patronize all of that, to go to the grocery store in Slater and try to drop your money everywhere around the district and sprinkle it around. It's not easy to do when there's not a whole lot of businesses around. But nonetheless, I think the community has really changed. The persona of Huxley is much different than when I first came here in 1988. Why don't we have an elementary school here? You know, so we got to address that over and over, because we have great elementaries in Slater and Cambridge, and we can't afford to build another school in Huxley.
Is it hard to convince these newcomers that they should think of their community as Slater and Kelly?
Here's what we did here, okay? I'm going to walk you around on the commons after this. So we have banners in our commons. We have the name of the towns written on our gym floor. So we've got all four communities represented in this school because we knew this was going to be the focal point of the community, of the Ballard District, and the kind of the flagship, if you will. And we're blessed to be in this building to begin with. But we wanted everyone that walked through that door to see the heritage of each of the communities. So you'll see the old train stations in each of the towns. You'll see those vintage pictures. And then you'll see that slowly sprinkled to the colored new pictures of the communities. Because quite honestly, people, when they go to play at Ballard, they look for the town Ballard if they're not familiar with our district. So we wanted to make it very clear that, no, we're four communities joined together for one mission, and that is to educate our children as best we can. So, no, I think they immediately, the newcomers to the town, appreciate and realize that this is pretty cool.
Can you even talk about different kind of personality or character traits of the people from those different towns?
Sure.
And how you negotiate that?
Sure. When I first came here in 1988, the problem I saw, keep in mind, I taught in all four communities. I coached football. I coached baseball. I coached basketball. I coached track. So I got to know all of these people. I got to know all of the kids, K through 12. Of course, much smaller group of people back then. Nonetheless, it was wonderful to get to know all of these people. And it was interesting because, I'm not saying that this was the way it was, but it seemed like when the Cambridge kids entered the junior high and entered the high school, they were kind of looked at unfairly at times. Nonetheless, it was the way it was. They were looked at as the fighters, the rough kids. Okay, honestly, they were. They were looked as the fighters, but boy, they had heart, and boy, they produced good athletes, and man, they could hit the baseball, right? So we dealt with that. And there were times when there were literally fights in the hallway over the Cambridge, sometimes called River Rats, believe it or not, and the Huxley kids, the rich kids from Huxley. And honestly, it was crazy, and I'm thinking, what did I get myself into?
My mind is blown. Sounds like New York City, sort of West Side versus the Bronx.
You know, on a really, really small scale, that's kind of how it was. And the Kelly kids, there was so few Kelly kids coming into the system, true Kelly kids that actually lived in the city of Kelly, that they just kind of were well-behaved, well-minded, nice kids. The Slater kids came over, and the Slater kids were kind of the same way, just kind of thought to be coming from hardworking parents, and they were well-behaved and well-supported. But boy, there was that Huxley-Cambridge thing that was alive for quite some time. And I was one of the first ones talking to the other coaches and even the principals at the time, Steve Horney and Larry Schaefer, saying, what is the deal here? Why is there such a chip on these kids' shoulders coming from Cambridge? And they said, Ronka, that's just the way it's always been. Now, fast forward to the consolidation, and when all of that happened, the new consolidation, when the elementary schools became great alike, and when all kids, keep in mind, Cambridge wasn't too fired up about having all these kids from all these different towns coming into their school. That changed everything.
What year was that?
That would have been, 1993 or 4? 92, 93. That changed everything. And very quickly, keep in mind I'm teaching at all of these schools, very quickly, that just started to disappear. And pretty soon, I'd say by about 97, 98, 99, there was no more of this contentious behavior or clashes between the towns. It just went away. And it went away because those kids matriculated through our system. They were gone. Now, the younger kids didn't know any better. They were making friends with Huxley kids and making friends with Slater kids and Kelly kids. And they all came in as seventh graders knowing each other, which was hugely advantageous. And there was just nowhere near the issues or problems. So that whole thing just disappeared. Nobody talks about that anymore.
So now would you be able to tell the difference between these
no.
kids?
No. You lined them up in the hallway, there's no way I could pick them out. No way. Back then, they clung and grouped together. Like groups of fish. You know, I had bullheads and the carp over here and the northerns over here. It was weird. They all just kind of flocked and moved together because that's what they were used to.
I'm digging a moat, it needs to be a really big ring. Maybe when we're finished with the castle, we can both be kings. We can all be kings, we can all be kings, yeah. We can all be kings, we can all be kings. We can all be kings, we can all be kings, yeah. We can all be kings.
The issue building this facility. Should we bring the baseball over to Huxley and build the baseball field while we're building this facility? And we all said, not going to touch it with a 10-foot pole. Slater is our baseball town. Let's keep it that way. I think it'll be that way forever. Who wants to ruin that feel and that reputation of that field? Nobody does. Keep it there. We'll travel over there. Our kids will jump on a bus or drive their cars to practice over in Slater. It's really kind of cool. It's different. But people do get confused from out of town, right? They come, okay, we're going to Ballard High School to play baseball. And there's been many times in the summertime people will come up and say, hey, where's your baseball field? Well, it's in Slater, huh?
You've been listening to Local Talk on KHOI Community Radio. I'm Paul Wearson, one of your hosts for today, with my co-host, Susan Franson, leading you on a visit to South Story County to explore the ideas of the Ballard Way.
Although he didn't use that phrase, Mr. Branca did a pretty good job of illustrating how the Ballard Creek towns negotiate to balance their interests and foster each other. We've heard from representatives of Kelly and Huxley, so I think it's time now to listen to a few words from the former mayor of Slater, Howard Hammond, telling us about something important that connects the towns.
And every time you have a new business in the community, that kind of adds a vibration. So recently, within the last 8 months, we've had a rebuilding of the local car wash and another organization and a business called Sheldahl Crossing, an antique store started. And then close to our developing trail system, a new cafe called the Nighthawk Cafe started less than a year ago. So those things energize the community. And then we're looking forward as each spring hits, we plan through the winter to accent our trail system. Slater's kind of a hub of trails. You can come out of Slater by walking, riding, or biking all the way to Ames along the county road. You can go from Slater clear across Story County, 32 miles to Marshall County on the Heart of Iowa Nature Trail, all owned and operated by the county conservation unit. And then opened just 2 years ago, new trails called the High Trestle Trail, and that trail runs from Ankeny on 10-foot-wide blacktop all the way to Slater. Then you can leave Slater and go 12 and a half miles westward all the way to Woodward. And that has sponsored some growth and some activity in those other cities also. That would be Madrid and Woodward in the western. So those are some of the things that are currently hopping and popping, and we got a great history and a great city background to build upon.
Well, you know, that trail system is pretty impressive.
Yes, it is. But what is similarly impressive is the ATV park over in Cambridge, which has really made use of Ballard Creek. I first learned about it from Cambridge Mayor Scott DeYoung and Councilman Michael Mackey, who is also a guidance counselor at Ballard East Elementary School. Later, I stopped by the school to see what Mr. Mackey thought the Ballard Way was.
One thing we didn't mention was that we have a ATV or motocross park. Mm-hmm. It's a private park. It's members only, and there aren't many places for people to ride that type of a vehicle around. It's the only one in the state that's wide enough for a side-by-side. Where two people sit side by side.
Mm-hmm. Well, and I think the guys who started it and who are providing leadership for it right now really do put a family emphasis on it. You go to some of the parks that allow for riding, you get a lot of hot shots who are out there, and they're competitive riders who need to practice their competitive skills. Not necessarily the case here. You get a ton of families on a nice afternoon or a nice weekend day, you can hear them running. It's not intrusive, but it's good to know that people are coming to Cambridge to take advantage of that opportunity.
I think they've got about 150 members. They have had events. They've had a veterans ride.
But then they also come back. They've got a real keen sense of serving the community. Mm-hmm. They help out with the truck pull during Jubilee days. In fact, they ran it, didn't they?
Yeah, they ran it.
They will come up to the school, and they've been in collaboration with myself and the principal there to do some safe riding courses, some safe riding qualifications, so that a kid who has an ATV or a family who has an ATV, those children are being taught in state law that they have that course under their belt before they are allowed to ride. So it's not like they exist in the periphery. They're part of our community, and we embrace them and what they're providing.
From what I learned from Scott DeYoung and Michael Mackey, I was eager to meet Anthony Rossing, the president of CORE, Cambridge Off-Road Enterprise. If he ever used the phrase Ballard Way, I'd like to play what he told me, followed by Michael Mackey's response.
The Ballard Way is, like an integrity kind of thing that, you're going to keep your nose to the grindstone, maybe do it a little differently than some people might. But it's still the right way. It's a blue-collar, kind of rough and tough, I'm going to get it done kind of way. Living in this community, they all feel the same way. They're very passionate about the things that they do, even in the community, through the schools, through volunteer services, stuff like that, we're going to see it through, regardless of any obstacle that we might come across.
Well, when Anthony mentions that blue collar, that working class background, I think it in part goes back to the fact that this is a rural community. While we have fewer and fewer farmers every year, there's still that working class mentality, that get her done, that gritty, tough, not afraid to get your hands dirty mentality. And I think it trickles down into that caring and compassionate approach to being neighborly. So I think Mr. Rosing nailed it. As you move forward and you continue to promote and explore South Story County, keep us in mind. We've got art teachers who are real active in the community and who are getting kids' artwork out there and getting recognized. We've got music programs and arts programs at the high school and middle school level that have great leadership from adults and then enormous, enormous participation with some incredibly talented young people. Obviously, our athletics garner a lot of attention and sort of speak for themselves. Our 4-H membership is just gigantic. And when you go to the county fair, the kids from Ballard are very, 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 very well represented in each of the areas that 4-H kids are showing. So there's a lot of great things going on. Are they things that aren't going on in other places? I don't know. Like I said at the beginning, I don't live in other places. I live here. And I'm going to continue to toot Ballard's horn as hard as I can. And anyone who listens will get an earful from me because I'm very, very proud of this place and proud to be part of it.
Well, you've been listening to Local Talk on KHOI Community Radio. I'm Paul Wearson with co-host Susan Franson, and so far today we've spoken with people from all over South Story County towns, and that makes they make up the Ballard School District. I believe you have a very special guest to end our visit today, Susan.
Yes, I want to introduce to our listeners who haven't met him yet, Taylor Stichka, a middle school math teacher over at Ballard Middle School, and a songwriter who's recently released an award-winning CD, The Floor is Lava.
I'm the seventh grade math teacher, and that is actually my first year in this position. I can kind of just give you a quick roadmap of how I got to this point. I taught at the Dallas Center Grimes School District, and my supervisor was actually one of the old principals, a former principal of Ballard. His name is Gordy Mosier. And I just had a really good relationship with him, and he helped me a lot in my student teaching experience. And he recommended that I apply at Ballard. And the only thing I knew really about Ballard when I was at Iowa State is that my roommate went to Ballard. And I knew that it had Huxley and Slater were part of the school district. But I applied, and I got a position teaching first grade, and I did that at Ballard West for 3 years. And then I transitioned into teaching technology, or being a technology integrationist, and I did that for 2 years.
And what's a technology integrationist?
So I worked with teachers. I met with students quite frequently, but also did planning and prep with teachers to try to help them find ways to integrate technology into their teaching and their curriculum in meaningful ways. One of the big things I tried to push was just using technology to enhance lessons, but not just using it for its own sake, because then it kind of defeats the purpose, I think. And so I did that for 2 years, and I split time between Ballard East and Ballard West doing that. So that was kind of a fun experience. I got to work with Kay all the way through, I guess, early kindergarten all the way through fifth grade. So I got a really good idea of the differences between those age groups and got to work with a lot of different teachers. And then actually the next year, so I guess when I first kind of started my last year of teaching first grade and my first year of doing technology, I actually had an idea driving on the way to my wife's folks in Minnesota. We had talked about another like method for some income for us, and I'm a guitar player. I've been very musical, play multiple instruments, and so I decided to try to do music lessons with a few students. And so I just started with, just a couple kids. And over the course of 2 or 3 years, I have a roster, and I currently still do have a roster of anywhere from about 70 to 80 students. And so it kind of just blew up, and I wasn't expecting that. And so after my 2 years of teaching technology, I actually took a year off of teaching to be at home part-time with my newborn baby, but also to expand my studio and grow my studio. And I did that for a year and loved it, but I just really missed teaching at Ballard. I missed not just the kids. I still was able to work with kids as a music teacher, but I just missed the relationship that I had with staff. And so that's what kind of brought me back to this position in seventh grade this year. I just missed it too much. And I think you kind of find that with people. I hear stories about other people that are away from Ballard for a while, but something just kind of draws them back. And I guess not being really from this area, I grew up in Nebraska, but that's kind of what the Ballard way means to me, is just like the way that things are done here and the relationships that you have with administrators and with your other teachers. I'm speaking more from a school standpoint rather than a community standpoint, but that's, I know other people have been drawn back to teaching here after they've left for some time. I actually think Mr. Ronka is an example of that, because I think he moved to Wisconsin for a very short stretch, but I think he moved back here because he just liked Ballard so much and kind of what it stands for. So, you know, I guess that's what kind of the Ballard way, I know that you've been talking with people about that. That's kind of what it means from my personal perspective, I guess. So, yeah.
Your music, I think, also reflects the Ballard way in the
right
sense that it's caring about people. And
sure,
this is music for children.
Right.
But it's without being preachy.
Right.
Every song has a little bit of a lesson. I haven't gotten to the end of all of them.
Sure.
The one, what is the street?
Delaware Street.
Yes. Street. That's a cute one. The boy wipes out on his bike.
That's actually a true story. That really happened to me, and I grew up on Delaware Street. And it was notorious in our neighborhood. I grew up in a very small town in Nebraska. It has about 180 people in it. And we had this hill on Delaware Street that had just like the worst washboards. And a lot of kids don't, when I say washboards on a road, a lot of kids don't know what that means, you know. But anybody that is from a small town and, you know, has experience with gravel roads, you know exactly what I'm talking about. So every time I go home to visit my family, we always drive down Delaware Street, and that just makes me laugh because of those washboards.
Take off my training wheels and ride my bike down that gravel hill on Delaware Street. I've been practicing all week. Got my helmet on and sunglasses too. Those washboards are brutal, they will make you crash on Delaware Street. Better watch my top speed. I got my brother's baseball cards in the spokes, I'm ready to go. On my way to the Petersons' house, my folks, they don't even know. Way down that legendary hill, my handlebars shake and I take a spill on Delaware Street. Scrape my elbows and my knees, and who should come along but Sherry Brandt? She waves at me, I try to smile, but I can't. She lives on Delaware.
These songs that I wrote, they initially just kind of came out of, I wrote a lot of songs when I was teaching first grade, because I had my guitar just hanging up in my room all the time on a stand. And so we did a lot of routines in the morning with my guitar, a lot of singing and things like that. And so a lot of these songs, I never had any intention of recording these songs. I had a whole bunch of songs. Some of the songs that are actually on this CD were for my first graders. There's a song called Big Three, which talks about, we always talked about not lying, cheating, or stealing. Those, I called those the Big Three. And so that song kind of arose out of that as a way to kind of teach that concept. And I had no intention of ever recording these. And then when I, like in my second or third year of teaching first grade, I listened to NPR quite frequently in the mornings on the way to school. And I heard a story about this genre of kids music that was kind of growing and growing, and they called it kindy music. And I had never really heard of that before. For me, kids music has always been, it kind of been, you know, the things you hear on the TV shows like Barney and Teletubbies and stuff like that. And that really does not appeal to me very much at all. But I heard this interview with this artist. His name is Justin Roberts, who's actually an Iowa native. As a matter of fact, he grew up in Des Moines, I think. He's based out of Chicago now, but he's like a Grammy-nominated artist. And so I heard some samples of his songs, and while I don't think my songs really stack up, you know, to his, I heard an example of somebody doing music for kids that I thought was, you know, interesting, and a way of writing songs and performing that also parents could really, you know, buy into and wouldn't want to pound their head on the steering wheel listening to them in their car while their kids were in the back, you know. And so I heard those songs, and I was just really kind of inspired to kind of try my hand at recording them and see just what I could come up with. And so then I started shifting and writing more songs that weren't so much just for teaching first graders, but just general, like songs about common experiences that children have. So yeah, like riding your bike and wrecking your bike, or one of my favorite songs is the second track. It's called Fruit Snack Monster, and it's about catching, a kid catches his dad raiding the cookie jar in the middle of the night, and his dad's supposed to be on a diet. That's another kind of autobiographical story, actually, which is kind of funny.
Up in the car, let's head to the grocery store. Mama says we're all out of treats and we need some more. 'Cause daddy ate all the fruit snacks in one sitting. It's fitting that mama's gonna settle the score.
She's buying oatmeal and flaxseed and everything in between. Organic produce, but what about little old me? She's in the cookie aisle. I start to smile. She's buying a treat that's just for me. Flash in the hall in the middle of the night. Daddy peeks his head in my room and then he's out of sight. He tiptoes down the stairs, he's up to no good, creeping in the kitchen. He's back for a midnight snack. I could stop him if I tried, but the kitchen's so very far. So I scream at the top of my lungs to sound the alarm. Mama sprints down the stairs and Daddy's got chocolate all over his face. What a disgrace, stealing cookies from the cookie jar. And Mama says there's no excuse, I refuse to let this go again. Your diet starts tomorrow, or you can find another bin. Then Daddy tries his puppy eyes. It works on Mama every time. I think my dad might be a cookie monster, and if Mom keeps this up, I think it's gonna cost her, 'cause she says there'll be a little less of Daddy to love. And even though he eats my cookies, I know he loves me. I can tell every time by the way that he hugs me. Yeah, me and Daddy, well, we fit like a glove.
Yeah, and then the big three, and then getting another track on there is about getting glasses, because that is a very distinct memory I have when I was a kid, is when I was getting those glasses, and then I walked out of the eye doctor's office, and it was amazing. Like, I was seeing the world again for the first time. I could actually see, like, the leaves on the trees and things like that, and it was just... So, you know, I try to write those kinds of experiences. I really try not to be preachy, because I think kids get a lot of that. And, you know, I just write more for pure enjoyment of music and kids just being entertained and having fun with music. That's why I teach music, too. So, you know, some of my songs might have a good message. One of the songs I did was actually was on a commercial for United Way of Story County, the song called Give Back. And I actually wrote that for them, but I still try not to be preachy, you know, because kids get that all the time, and I just want music to be fun and enjoyable for them. So that's kind of the story of how things came about, I guess. So,
well, what's the Sandbox Band?
So the Sandbox Band is just the name of the band we came up with. I'm Mr. S. So the band is, the whole thing is called Mr. S and the Sandbox Band, and I guess it's kind of, Mr. S is kind of the cohesive thing that's always there. But the Sandbox Band is kind of like a revolving door of friends and other musicians that I know. My main collaborator, I guess, is my friend Seth Peterson, who I grew up with in Nebraska. We were born 6 days apart in the same hospital, and we've been best friends since we were like 4 years old, 5 years old. And so he's kind of part of the glue that holds it together. But, you know, besides him, I work with a lot of my friends, like friends that I maybe met at church that are musicians, or people. I got in touch with the jazz department at Iowa State, and that's how I got a lot of my horn players and things like that. One of the ladies that sings backup vocals on a couple of the songs is from Chicago, and it's, you know, just like mutual friends that we have. And so I always try to play music with a lot of people, even at my live shows. It's kind of who's available to play with, to play the songs with me. And so that's what the Sandbox Band is. It's just a revolving group of friends that play in the sandbox with me, you know, play music with me. And so that was kind of the idea behind that. So, yeah. And the kind of the interesting thing about recording the album is I was really, you know, I'm a teacher and my wife is a social worker, so it's not exactly like I have a lot of, you know, extra cash laying around to be able to pay for something to, you know, to to record the album. So I actually did all the recording and mixing myself. I turned my basement, I live in Ankeny, and I turned my basement into a home recording studio, which is kind of what a lot of people do these days, because the technology is there for you to be able to use a computer and do all kinds of recording yourself. So with a $500 microphone and a computer, you could do lots of different things. And so, but I kind of went pretty deep into it and learned how to run a mixer, learned how to run the recording software, and I mixed it all together to try to blend it to make it sound good. And the only thing I really didn't do on this project was have it mastered, which is just something that you do to make music sound good on across a lot of different mediums, so like in your car stereo, in your CD player, in your earbuds, and things like that. So we actually went to Minneapolis to have it mastered. But the website, all the artwork and stuff like that, that was done by my friend Seth Peterson. So it is like truly a do-it-yourself kind of project. I mean, we didn't outsource anything really except the mastering. So we released the album, it would have been in January of 2014. And then in April of 2014, we were recognized by the Parents' Choice Foundation. We submitted our album to be considered for that. And we received a Parents' Choice Recommended Award. So, and that's just a nonprofit company that's been around. I think they're based in the East Coast, maybe like in Maryland or something like that. But they review all kinds of children's media. And so we were just really pleased that, you know, somebody besides us, besides we ourselves, were, you know, tooting our own horn for our CD. You know, it was nice to be recognized for your work by somebody else that's kind of like a, you know, objective judge, I guess, of, you know, well, all that stuff is subjective, but it was nice just to be recognized by somebody else and kind of, you know, made us feel like it was worth doing and that people were appreciating it. And so, hopefully this summer I'm going to be recording more. I have a lot more songs. I have, I'm writing songs all the time just because I'm just getting ideas constantly working with kids and the common experiences they have. So I'm excited to get back into the studio. I'll be playing at a lot of libraries all around Iowa this summer to be able to kind of share my music with some people in some smaller communities too. So that's kind of exciting too. So.
Do you have a website or an email list or anything for those?
Yes, I do. Our website is just thesandboxband.com, and you can sign up for our email list right there, and you can kind of be kept in the loop of where we'll be at and when we'll be playing different locations in Iowa this summer. We're playing a show. I've played at Huxley Prairie Fest before. But this summer I'll be playing for the Huxley Public Library, which I've done in the past, and have a lot of fun doing that.
You've been listening to Local Talk on KHOI Community Radio. Your hosts have been Paul Wearson and Susan Franson, bringing you many voices of Ballard, starting with Merle Olberding, Ron and Gene Finch, John Ronca, Howard Hammond, Scott DeYoung, Michael Mackey, Anthony Rossing, and Taylor Sitchka. You also heard from KHOI reporter Sarah Hegland. The show was engineered today by Rebecca Brown.
Music you heard was King of the Sandbox, Delaware Street, and Fruit Snack Monster by Taylor Sitchka, and the Sandbox Band from their CD, The Floor is Lava. Our theme song is Backtracking by Al Harris and Tom Richards from their CD, The Ballad of Kate Shelley.
You can also listen to this show and all our past Local Talk shows online at your website, khoifm.org, where we are streaming live. You'll find recent shows on our homepage with links to the organizations and other resources mentioned on our show.
If you enjoyed this show, tell your friends and consider becoming a member during our spring fund drive starting at the end of April. Or stop by the Pentorium at 410 Douglas Avenue in Ames.
Local Talk is a radio production training workshop as well as a radio show. If you would like to join the team as a reporter, contact us at 292-2878. Or at the email address of khoiradio@gmail.com. Your participation as audience makes KHOI possible. Thank you for listening, and see you again on the radio.